So in this conference today, we're in the 10th month on this series, and I can't say how long we're going to be, maybe 3 years. There's so much here. Every time I read one of her books, it's like I'm reading it all over again. These revelations from the Lord are so unusual and yet so sound that you have to say just what Jesus said. When you read these writings, they become a part of you, if you really believe. So the insights here are the way Jesus actually lived within his divine life on earth, and now what he wants us to do in preparation for the new Pentecost. Now, the life of this beautiful saint, she's venerable now, named Luisa Picaretta, born on April 23rd, 1865, in the Italian town of Corato. I'm told that's in the area of Bari, in Italy. And she said, I was born in a backward position. Very dangerous, right? And baptized the same day. Her whole life was lived in the town, with the exception of some months that her family spent every year at a farm and outside the town. She died in the odor of sanctity. Why do they call that odor of sanctity? Well, because a lot of the saints had a perfume. And that was true. The little flower, roses, okay? And she died on March 4th, 1947, shortly before her 82nd birthday. By all standards, her life was the most extraordinary among saints. When you hear what I have to say, you'll say, you've never heard a life like this. She had no brothers, four sisters. Both her parents, Vito and Nicola, lived in Corato. And as a child, she was timid, had a fearful disposition, had frequent nightmares induced by a fear of the devil. Several times she dreamed of the Blessed Virgin, who freed her from the spirit of evil. In her lifetime, Jesus revealed that the spirit of evil discerned, yes, that God had special plans for her, and that would bring great glory to God. Also, that he would be defeated in a special way. So the devil tried every way to trouble her with some impure feelings, thoughts, but Jesus prevented all his efforts. Such failures made him furious, and he even tried to terrorize her with frightful dreams. He sensed that his kingdom was in some way destined to be destroyed on earth through this child, namely the new Pentecost. At the age of 9, she was made her first communion, also received confirmation. Now that's way back in 1865. Unusual. It became clear at this time that the Eucharist was the center of her love and affections. She remained lost in contemplation for hours in the church, kneeling in an immobile position, 9 years old. At the age of 11, she chose to become a daughter of Mary. I would think that's a consecration of Grignion de Montfort. When she was 12 years old, she began to hear the voice of Jesus within her, especially at communion time. Jesus now became her teacher and her spiritual growth. He corrected her, reproved her, gave and explained meditations on the cross and lessons about it, and the virtues of obedience, meekness, his hidden life. In this way, he led her into complete detachment from herself and the things of the world. At 13, she was meditating on Jesus' passion. She was so profoundly moved by this that she stopped breathing. She went outside on a second floor balcony where her home was, and there Jesus gave her a vision of his sufferings as he carried his cross to Calvary. The scene was so distressing that she had to return to her room in a daze, her heart broken with sorrow. She heard Jesus say amid his sufferings, "Soul, help me." She shed floods of tears, now 13 years old. 13, yes. From this time until her death, Louisa was given the grace of a suffering servant of the Lord to suffer for love of Him. First, she experienced physical sufferings that were hidden from others. With this came profound spiritual trials. For 3 years, she suffered from diabolical attacks, and the last attack from demons was very violent and painful, so that she became unconscious and came to an end. She was now 16 years old. She now moved into a new spiritual state in which she had a new vision of the crucified Jesus. He bestowed a special grace that moved her so sweetly, lovingly, to accept a total commitment to the divine will. From Jesus and our sorrowful mother, she accepted the call to become a victim soul. At 17, she was unable to retain the food that she ate and would immediately vomit it. Also, she was confined to bed from time to time, but that was a beginning when she would be confined to that bed for 54 years. Never left it. I may be mistaken, excuse me, for almost 65 years. There was no medical explanation for her illness. Priests, doctors could not understand it, and because of their lack of understanding, she was subject to much misunderstanding and emotional suffering. After a long time, they finally accepted the fact that Louisa was suffering because of a divine call. But for almost 65 years until her death, Louisa lived without eating food or drinking water. A miracle, a deity miracle. If we may put it in its real setting, she lived only of the divine will and the Eucharist as her food. 65 years. Have you ever heard anything? At 22, she was committed to bed until she died. On October 16, 1688, at the age of 23, she received the grace of what we call the spiritual espousal, engagement to Jesus, prior to the mystical marriage. According to her description of what followed 11 months later, she was given the grace of the mystical marriage to Jesus in the presence of the Blessed Trinity and the Heavenly Company. On that same day, she received what is called God's greatest gift. This grace is described to be far greater than the mystical marriage. This particular grace will be described later in our second conference when we go into detail on some of the stages of her development. In 1899, February, she began to write her experiences and messages given her by Jesus in obedience to Jesus and to her confessor. This would last for 40 years. During this time, she wrote what amounted to 36 manuscripts of teaching from Jesus about the divine will. During her lifetime, some of her manuscripts were published, but always under obedience to her bishop, the confessor, and spiritual director. Towards the end of her life, her spiritual director, Blessed Anabele de Francia, was so impressed with the revelations, namely the hours of the Passion of our Lord Jesus Christ, that he decided from that point on to give up his other ministries. He founded two religious institutes for men and nuns. He placed those under the direction of other people, and he began to live it, and he published 19 of her manuscripts. This one on the Passion, he read to Pope St. Pius X. After the Pope was listening to the reading, he interrupted him and said, "Why are you standing? For such sublime teaching, you should be kneeling." Now there's a saint, Pope, what he thought of those writings. Her book, The Virgin Mary and the Kingdom of God, The Divine Will, was widely read in Italy and spread to other countries. Blessed Anabele was so impressed with the sublime teachings of Louisa, he said, "I have totally dedicated myself to the great work of the divine will." He was the founder of two religious institutes and, as I just said, placed them under the hands of subordinates. During her lifetime, her revelations were placed in the hands of theologians, philosophers, medical doctors. The professor of dogmatic and mystical theology at the International University of St. Anthony in Rome read her writings, and he made three critiques. First, her person. He said it's evident that she lives a life of grace intensely, from which she creates the most beautiful and exact descriptions. And only the gifts of the Holy Spirit could give her the knowledge and still more the science to describe them. Now, at the end of his evaluation, he wrote, I am convinced that the person in question is the soul of God and that the work being accomplished in her is divine. My examination of the book and the effect which I myself have experienced with her discourse permits me to take this position. This discourse has placed in my spirit a new yearning for a more intense spirituality. He was touched by it. Only God holds the keys to man's heart and causes it to vibrate towards sanctification. Now, regarding the dogma, the teaching, his name was Father Consalvo. He said, I find the book to completely conform with the teachings of Holy Church and those revealed in the sources of Revelation. Now, the other examiner, said Father Domenico Franze, he also was a Franciscan, but a medical surgeon, professor of physiology and missionary medicine at the same university. He said, as a religious examiner, it is most consoling to have received assurances that for many years, and after exhausting examinations by physicians, confessors, and archbishops, no one has ever discovered any deception. He closed with the following statement, it is my judgment, both as a priest and physician, that only a mortified and continuously mortified soul, only a human will fused in the divine will, could arrive at concepts so basic and fundamental as those which this soul reveals. And this is achieved without studies or schooling, being only on a bed of pain and spasm with an extremely limited background in literature, theology, or asceticism. Yet she speaks with true competence about the most obscure themes and gives solutions to the most difficult problems that takes the soul of whoever reads her writings to the most aromatic spheres of virtue. Aromatic would mean perfume, you know, the most delightful atmosphere. Now, we can't go into too much detail about her life right now. That can be read in her latest book, the one that's circulating now with you. After 64 years of confinement, in a bed of pain and many sufferings in the Passion of Jesus and other sufferings, Luisa died in 1947. She was already honored as a saint by the people of her city and by the clergy. Her funeral was a city-wide event attended by, I would say, thousands of people, not hundreds. Nuns, priests, by the bishop. She was laid out in the parish church for viewing, and hundreds came to honor her. She was buried with great solemnity, and 47 years later, November 20th, 1994, the Holy See opened her cause for beatification, Feast of Christ the King. At the request of Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope John Paul II signed a document removing her, first of all, from condemnation from the Holy Office. And her 36 volumes were then turned over to the Archbishop, who assigned four priests and two lay people to go to the Vatican and make copies of all her writings. They wore out three copiers because they ran the machine day and night, 24 hours of the day. They were exhausted, but they made official copies which are now being translated into different languages. Volume 10 is one of the copies on the table now. But from all that has been written about her and the authentic experience of mystical graces that she's received, the suffering she courageously, humbly, lovingly endured, I would say that she is a soul that has reached heights of sanctity that is rare in the history of the Church. Later on, we'll give you what Jesus himself said about her, namely that besides Our Lady, who lived perfectly in the will of God, only one other person has done that. He said, it's you. Now, how about that? Now, what about John of the Cross, Jesus of Babylon, and so forth? Well, I gave you something about that, and I will mention it later. But briefly right now, Jesus said, I have a grace that I've never given before. That's why. See? The grace was to live in my divine will. All the saints did God's will, but they did not live in his will like he is asking now. See, he said, look at my spirituality now. It's like this. Consider the sun and the rays of the sun. The rays coming from the sun are sanctifying grace. I'm the sun. All my saints lived in sanctifying grace to perfection. I'm calling you higher into the sun, living in the divine will. He, in other words, makes a difference between doing the divine will and living in the divine will. Because once you make that, you're living in me. Now keep that in mind. Now we're going to talk about her spiritual journey. She began writing the revelations given to her by Jesus and Mary at the age of 17. At that time, she began a novena for Christmas to honor the 9 months Jesus remained in the womb of our Blessed Mother. And each day, she made 9 meditations for 9 days. See, 9 meditations each day for 9 days. On the eve of Christmas, she had a vision of Jesus that filled her with so much love that she was in ecstasy. This love experience lasted for several days. From this time on, she heard a voice within her that never left her throughout her life. Now, at this point, it was not every day, but there will come a time when she was with him every day. At first, the voice corrected her for her failings, scolded her, taught her to do everything well, and also gave her new courage after a fall, urged her to promise to be more careful in the future. And it was in this way that Jesus, the divine teacher, detached her heart from all affections that would become an obstacle to her love for Jesus. Keep that in mind. He wasn't, in other words, he commands us to love one another. So it wasn't in conflict with that. But anything that stood in the way, see, we're to love God above all things and love all in the Lord. That's what we're talking about. For some time, her spiritual life remained at this level. Jesus corrected her, encouraged her, and told her that he wanted her to hear his voice clearly, quote, so that I may pour my graces over you and make you fall completely in love with me. I shall do everything for you, and you give me your will. That will be enough for me. Now, this kind of constant observation, correction by Jesus, was intended to bring her to a union with Jesus that has seldom been achieved by many saints. She said that Jesus made his voice heard in her heart. He told her, I shall be with you wherever you go, to observe all your actions, direct and unify all the movements and desires of your heart. She would receive quick correction whenever she was distracted by family conversations and trivial, unnecessary talk. Jesus gave the reason. These conversations, he said, surround your heart with harmful sentiments, resulting in nullifying the effect of my graces which I have lavished on you. We're talking about very fine points in the spiritual life now. See, you may say he's being a dictator. He wants her to be the best, so he wasn't missing anything. No imperfection as far as possible. See? So be careful of that notion. In other words, that he's dictating and it's perhaps uncalled for. New graces were given to her of a high order. After communion one day, she had a vision of Jesus' great love for her and how fickle and inconstant was the love of creatures for him. From that time, she loved Jesus totally, was unable to love anyone beyond what was Christian. She learned to love people without separating herself from Jesus because she was now able to see each person as an image of God. She saw all that happened to her from creatures as coming from the hand of God, whether it was something good or if it was evil or harmful, it was permitted for her good by the Lord. And Jesus explained that he was going to lead her to high sanctity in these words, I shall delight in making you a perfect image of me. You shall imitate me from my birth to my death, and do not have any doubt about succeeding, because I will teach you how it can be done a little at a time. Now, also keep that in mind. You will imitate my life from my birth to my death. go all through the phases. Let's take the virtues. When the church considers a saint, they don't look at what they did. I shouldn't put it that way. They look at the virtues. To express virtues, you have to have action. Humility. He insisted on a fundamental virtue, humility, as a special virtue needed before he could give her many graces that were to come. In the Gospel, you remember, I quoted many times, Jesus, without me, nothing, do nothing, meaning, with me, you can do everything. To Louisa, he said, so that I can pour my graces into your heart, it is necessary for you to convince yourself that by yourself, you are nothing and are capable of nothing. He insisted on this in these words, and he said, I want you to continuously perform acts of humility. You must be like an infant in swaddling bands who, unable to move by himself, must rely on his mother for everything. Remain near me, like an infant, and expecting everything from me, asking for my help and assistance, acknowledging your nothingness. Now, what saint does that remind you of? The little flower, spiritual childhood, the way of spiritual childhood. They lived at the same time. This reminds us of St. Therese. So the doctrine, is not new in that sense. Now, the good intention, always important in our life. I think many of us will be very surprised when the Lord shows us our life. We did good things. Why did we do them? Did we fast really for the Lord? I'm going to look up in the sky here. Did we fast for the Lord? Oh, I leave you to judge that. Jesus corrected her regarding her intention and her practice of the virtues and good works. When she performed her task poorly, he said, you thought you could begin, continue, and end the work without me. Well, you succeed in doing it, but not according to my wish. Ask me for my assistance at the start of everything you undertake. Always have me present to work with you, and it will be completed with perfection. That's why I'm saying, make the consecration each morning, but before each task, Jesus, in your will. Cooking, shopping, in your will. Get in the car, in your will. Meeting friends, in your will. Socializing, in your will. Recreation, in your will. Now, what about sorrow for sin? Forget the past, he said. She was not able to make amends for her past faults and did not know what to do, breaking into tears at the thought of her past sins. She kept going into the past and telling Jesus about it, but he scolded her severely, and he said, I do not want you to think of the past. Know that when a soul convinced of having sinned humiliates herself, the contrite and humiliated soul seeks cleansing in the sacrament of penance. And it is an affront. He says, I feel insulted in my mercy, and an affront to my mercy and an impediment to my love if mentally she persists in stirring the mud of the past. See, I no longer remember the evil you committed, having perfectly forgotten everything. He suggested how much better it would be if we thought about our loving one another, meaning himself, each other, Jesus and the soul. Try now, from now on, just to please me, and you will always be at peace. Now, the topic of doing God's will. To train her always to do his will, he corrected her in every way. She wrote, Jesus wanted me to take delight only in him, and even to deny myself the pleasure I found in the beauties of nature. That's not forbidden, but he said, in order not to be attached, because he's jealous. He's the right to be. I'm the first. I'm number one in your life. When in church I fix my gaze on a sacred decorations, appointments, or other innocent, holy things, he would reprimand me, saying, what delight is there for you except in me? If while working I was seated comfortably, he would say to me, you are too comfortable. You do not consider that my life was a life of continuous suffering. And quickly she said, to satisfy him, I would sit only half the chair. That's what I'm doing right now. But not for penance. is to reach my recorder here. When I worked slowly and lazily, he would say, "Hurry, come early, and remain with me in prayer." Keep in mind, Jesus is preparing Luisa for very high sanctity and to become a victim soul. So he did not miss anything that could be considered imperfect in her conduct. He also kept giving her graces of a high order that could be expected a more perfect performance. She said, "He kept drawing me toward prayer and held me completely absorbed in contemplation of many lights and graces bestowed. I would have wanted to remain in prayer indefinitely. I never experienced fatigue or boredom, and I felt so satisfied that I seemed to need no food other than that which came with prayer." Now note, this is a very special grace that was preparing her for the time when she would not eat or drink at all. In all this, Luisa said, "Jesus tried to kill my selfish self-will." I'm paraphrasing that. She said merely my will. But that's selfish. See, that side of our will. "Even in the smallest things, so that I live only for him. So God permitted me to experience serious paradoxes in the love which was entirely holy and totally directed to him." And now the subject of suffering. Gradually, Jesus was preparing Luisa for the vocation of victim, a life of constant suffering and complete surrender to the divine will. He taught her about his inner life of suffering while on earth and during his passion and death, what happened in his divine life that we don't have in the Gospels. Very little of it. See, that's why these writings are so unusual. He then asked her acceptance of the pains and sufferings that she would endure for love of him. Note also, he said, "Your soul, inflamed by love, will accept the cross I prepare for you for some time. Your suffering will be sweet, and you will reach a point where you cannot live without suffering." She loved it. That doesn't mean she didn't have the pain. Oh, very much so. More so than us. Because the more pure and holy a person becomes, the more acute their sufferings are. Therefore, Our Lady, enormous. Thing. We must be careful not to think that there was anything like masochism. That's a perverted love for suffering, for the sensual joy that it brings to such people. The real motive for redemptive suffering, as St. Paul wrote, was to fill up what was lacking in the sufferings of Christ. Jesus selects souls to suffer his passion as a way of helping to atone for sin, the salvation of countless souls, and to bring countless graces upon souls. She was given special graces to endure this kind of suffering. She said, "Jesus ignited so much love in me for this sweet suffering that it was more painful for me not to suffer." We can't imagine that. See? Not to suffer. "This yearning, which came to life in me, was never snuffed out." During her communion time, she asked for, quote, "nothing more ardently than to be permitted to experience sweet sufferings similar to his." This is extraordinary. See, this is out of the ordinary. We're not called to that normally. But Jesus does call them. Padre Pio, all the stigmatists, see, St. Francis of Assisi. Now, dryness. Jesus now wanted to experience dryness and a lack of consolations, and having the consolation of his presence, because he was for her, but he was preparing her. When God gives you special graces, know that that's going to be raising to a higher level. Doesn't mean necessarily more suffering, but it may, but not necessarily. But he wanted to live by faith. That's what hopefully all of us are doing. And don't feel down about that. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who have believed and not seen." So he said, "Now you will act and suffer with good will, knowing my eyes are fixed on you, even though I will not let myself be seen or felt by you. If you will remain faithful to me, I will reward you when I return and let you see me. He reassured her about her misgivings over her ability to endure everything and the reason why. He said, is to prepare your heart to receive the new graces. See, always new, another stage higher, that I shall bestow upon you, to prepare you for the high levels to which I want to raise you. The more severe the tests I will subject you to, the greater the graces I will bestow upon you. In this state of suffering, she passed many days of intense pain. She said each day seemed like an eternity. Think of one of your days when you went through a lot of pain, and you thought, how many days? The nights were an everlasting wake. If you've been in a hospital, been wake all night, an everlasting wake. The hours and minutes were like centuries, and the years brought nothing but bitter desolation. And this we're talking about somebody 19, 20 years old. I felt myself give way, my heart and breathing stop. At times I felt as if my whole being had been frozen. Her family did not understand the reason why she suffered, insisted that she get medical help, which did her no good. Through all this, she had a profound conviction of the truth of what Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. She wrote, the soul knows that it is incapable of anything without Jesus, that everything is owed to him. Jesus is the true spiritual director, teaches the soul how to remain in the state of abandonment, obscurity in prayer, in Holy Communion, visits to the Blessed Sacrament. Her prayer life. During all her prayer time at Mass alone, or visits Blessed Sacrament, she experienced great emptiness and pain, agonies of death. She did not want to remain for long in prayer. Now we can relate to that. Dryness. Or even at communion time, to avoid the pain of remaining alone. To help her at this time over the great turmoil within her, Jesus appeared to her and said, at prayer, when you do not feel recollected, think of nothing and be at peace. But by the way, that doesn't mean empty-minded. Don't let those thoughts trouble you. Don't let it, think of nothing. Don't let it occupy your mind. That's what he means. Do not think about why your prayer is unsuccessful, because this causes more distraction. Instead, humble yourself, believe in the merits of suffering, and remain at peace, tranquil. As for her communion time, she said, I do not want you to be sad when you do not tarry there. See, she wanted to leave because she just couldn't take it, deprived of the magnetic power of my love. Do your best to receive me well. Thank me after you receive me. Ask me for the graces and aids you need, and do not worry. Of this time, Luisa said, in the days that passed without Jesus, I could not create a good thought. Have you ever been in that state? Create a good thought. I was unable to say a word in the spirit of charity. I had no good feelings for anyone. Well, now, I think we feel better about that. We're human. But there were many times when Jesus came to console her, granted her new graces, all to prepare her for the next stage. At this stage, Jesus said, I want to purify your soul from any flaw that might interfere with my love for you. I will put you to the test of a very bitter battle. I shall be your arm, your strength, and fight with you and for you. I shall give your enemies the freedom to attack you, torment you, tempt you in every way, so that when you are freed, you will be able to vanquish them forever. He means the devil. I will enrich your soul with new merits and gifts. I will also give myself to you after the above-mentioned victory in the fight against the devils. I will make my stable permanent residence in you. We will then be united forever, at the age of 23. He taught her how to fight the evil spirits that would not give her rest day or night. He said, begin the battle in my name, Jesus. during the ordeal, continuously invoke my name, Jesus, to serve as a bulwark of security. For the recorder, that's pound him on the head with Jesus. Use my name as the seal of completion to this most painful odyssey, which will begin, continue, and end victoriously in my will. My will render you entirely like me, similar to me. Jesus gave good advice for dealing with temptations and demons for us. He promised Luisa, I will never permit the demons to tempt you beyond your capability. And St. Paul put it in the same way. God will not tempt you beyond your strength, but the temptation will give you a way out. I first evaluate the soul's strength. Then I donate my effective graces, and then lead them into the violent battle. If a soul occasionally falls, it is not my fault. It is because the soul did not wish to remain united to me. He also gave this advice. If you meet with the enemy without fear, you will be able to withstand the most sinister attacks. Demons fear most a soul trained in courage that is based on me. Frightened and terrified, the demons immediately try to take flight, but are unable to do so since they are tied to my will. I sent them. See? And are forced to endure great torture and torment, ignominious defeat. Be courageous. Through such souls, they're humiliated. See? Now the trials. Her love for Jesus changed to fierce hatred. And now these are feelings. Keep that in mind. See? Feelings. She felt, see, notice, that she had blasphemed God. She said the words. She felt. Unable to look in his picture. She felt terrible hatred, was unable to hold the rosary beads in her hands or to kiss them. Made her go to pieces. Unable to love God. It was like hell. All her graces were made to look like just imagination. She was urged to relax. Take it easy. Seek every kind of comfort. The devil has tormented her with thoughts that Jesus was just deceiving her all this time. She was now in their hands, and everything was finished for her, that she was just their toy. No hope that Jesus would love her anymore. She was led to despair for her salvation. Occasionally she was forced to tear to pieces holy images in her hand, out of anger, desperation. She felt that it was by an uncontrollable force from the devil, see? But then, when she did this in sorrow, she wept with great tears and kissed the torn pieces over and over again. Now you see, Jesus didn't spoil her. But the demons could not see her inner soul. She wrote, in my soul, I was always united to Jesus, for whom I had a sea, an ocean, of well wishes, and for whom I wept, kissed and re-kissed the torn pieces of the sacred image. Then she had temptation to commit suicide, to throw herself in a nearby well, tormented by diabolical words. It is useless for you to live after having committed so many sins. Your God has abandoned you because you were unfaithful to him. This did not stop there. The demons added other tortures, beating her on every part of her body, penetrating her body with sharp needles, choking her, making her believe she was near death. Also felt the ground disappear beneath her and red flames coming up to consume her, and the demons tried to drag her down into it. And then Jesus came to comfort her. Thank you, Jesus. And to revive her. And gave her new life. She said, after reviving me, he let me understand that in all that happened there had been no offense. Hold on to that. See, in our temptations too, if they're only feelings, we don't want them. Not your faults. She says, since my will felt repugnance, did not want them. Jesus warned her not to pay any attention to the devil, who was a wild, a lying spirit. He urged her to have patience, bravely endure her troubles. Then she would have total peace. He then left her alone, but infused with a new spirit. Another trial was for the devil to persuade her to believe that if she received communion, she would not receive Jesus. But instead, the devil would come with terrible torments to cause her eternal death. But obedience to her confessor commanded her to receive communion, or the name Jesus pronounced with love, banished the devil. Again at night, while praying, devils would terrify her and keep her from praying by snuffing out her lamp and making deafening noises or sounds as of a person dying. She endured this cruel ordeal for 3 years, except for 1 week of relief. She said the Lord taught her in communion as to the best way to chase the demons away. He said, ignore them, defy them as if they were ants. Reduce them to the deepest humiliation. Stay with the Lord in prayer and contemplation, especially on the passion and death of Jesus. So in other words, if you strongly tempt and say, Jesus in your name, I command the spirit of evil to leave you. Even the gesture, I mean, that reinforces your feeling. Now, the state of redemptive suffering. After these trials, Jesus appeared to her surrounded by countless enemies who beat him severely, pressed thorns into his head, dislocated his legs and arms, then placed him in the arms of our Blessed Mother. She was filled with such great grief at the sight. She said she would have been willing to die 1,000 deaths. We can understand those words, 1,000 deaths. But at that time, they are so filled with God's love, they're raised to heights that we can only imagine. Then Jesus invited her to accept the offer to become a victim of reparation for the many sins committed against divine justice and to bring about the conversion of sinners. He told her that if she accepted, she would receive 3 great blessings. 1, Jesus would never again leave her alone, but would come into her to suffer all the outrages committed against him by man. This grace, he said, was given only to very few. And then a very special grace, he would raise her up to as much glory as the sufferings communicated to her by him deserved. And the third, he would give her the assistance, guidance, comfort of our Blessed Mother. She was given the permission to grant Luisa any grace, even the treasure of grace, according to the measure of her ability to receive such graces. She accepted to submit to whatever Jesus wanted of her. I'm trying to put as much on tape as I can because this is so good and I have more than enough. So I hope you'll forgive me if I don't allow time for questions. But I wonder if you have any questions to ask after listening to all this. I mean, it's out of this world. I've read many lives in the saints and I imagine you've read some. I've never read sufferings like this. Oh yes, they went through the Passion, but not 65 years. Is there any question, though, you want to ask about this?
Did you say that she didn't eat or drink?
Yes, for
65
years. Yes, yes. She's a living miracle.
And she just received communion.
Yes. We know that saints like Lucretia Neumann lived only in the Eucharist. Also, the patron saint of Switzerland, for 10 years, he lived only on the Eucharist. So there's some precedent for that. Maybe he drank water, fluid. But no, not even fluids.
She died at 23.
No, no. She died at 82. But at 23, she was raised to the divine union in the will of God. So So you can believe, if we can believe her revelation, Jesus said, only two people have lived in my world perfectly, my mother and you, because she's the model of a person living in the divine will. She's the patroness, you might say, besides Our Lady. Our Lady is called the mother of the divine will.
Could you like say that she's almost like out of this world?
Yeah.
In a way, I mean like...
She was living almost like Adam and Eve in a state of innocence, except not all the gifts were given, which will be given in the new Pentecost. Not even she received them. That state is coming. And we're preparing for it. Every person consecrated to divine will now can pray for that time when it comes. We'll be the first ones to receive it. So we're to pass this on to as many as possible. And he says, if you want the gift of my divine will, she said, how will I receive it? He said, ask for it. Ask for it. So when you make a consecration, the Lord is giving it to you. But not perfectly, because we move in and out of it. We do our own will at times. We don't deny ourselves. It's imperfect.